You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. Episode 70 of Wins Above Fantasy. I have a very special episode today. I am not with my usual partner, Van Burnett, filling in for Van, who is off in South America, actually, this week. Is Pitcherless own Christopher Webber. You might know him as Schwebzy, host of In the Deep. Schwebzy, it's an honor to have you on. Thanks for filling in. I know it's big shoes to fill in with Van, and I know you wear many hats at Pitcherless. A moderator, a podcast host. You do a great job over there with Jordan. Thanks for filling in, and thanks for joining and talking some baseball while my normal co-host is off doing much more interesting things than talking about baseball in the dog days of August.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. And I would really, really like ease off on calling me a host when the work split is really like it's 80% Jordan and 20% me. I'm fun fact, little known fact about what the many hats I wear at Pitcherless. I'm actually the service support manager there too. So if you've ever written into Pitcherless and gone, "Hey, I want to cancel my account," that was probably me that answered.
Ah, I did not know that. See, that's, I thought I knew you pretty well. You know, we've talked a bunch in the Discord as much as, you know, over the computer screen and keyboard friends could be. You know, we're now doing a podcast together. I think we've played MLB The Show together. You learn something new every day. I did not know that you were also the support manager. I'm sure, for a different podcast episode, but I'm sure there's some. And maybe we can't get into it, but there's probably some interesting emails that you've gotten there. You know, I don't know if it's someone complained about one of Nick's bad puns or something like that. But that would be an interesting deep dive. Maybe you can do it on
that's like on the list.
Yeah, exactly. All right. But getting into it, want to keep this similar to what we did last week with Van. We did a deep dive into Vinny Pasquantino and looked into sort of the things for hitters that, you know, foreshadowed a breakout coming, right? Like when Vinny P came up, like he had great plate discipline, great batted ball metrics, and just didn't have the results and was kind of coming. And until he got hurt, unfortunately for me this week, it started to come to fruition over the last month, right? Like the results started to match the process, and wanted to do the same thing with pitching here. So did a similar thing, and I'm kind of using Justin Steele as a model, right? Like he was kind of a guy that was striking a ton of guys out, but for one reason or another, just kind of was waiver wire fodder. Like in most leagues, I don't know about you, but like Justin Steele was out there till like mid-July, I think, in most of my NFBC leagues, like 15 teamers or even more. You know, he was streamed for good matchups, but people didn't fully buy in, but now it kind of has. So kind of wanted to run a similar sheet to look for guys who have had the process and find late season starting pitchers that way. Some guys last year that I could think of that popped up around this time was like Tarik Skubal. I think someone that you've talked about a bunch, Ranger Suarez, Albert Alzolay, Blake Snell, who had that bounce back, Tanner Houck, who kind of broke out in the second half. So some good, some guys who didn't really carry it over to this year, and then sort of Snell following the same sort of blueprint where he was really bad, then went on a run where he was really good, and now he got kind of knocked around today, but still has been good on the whole in the second half. So I think there could be some guys here, and then there's just some guys that it's a little different for pitchers. We were talking off air, right? Like, there's only so much that a filter spreadsheet can show you for pitchers. Like, you have to kind of look at the results and who's running hot. I think, you know, velocity and stuff and command are sort of something that clicks or don't or doesn't and kind of sticks with it when that does happen. So I don't know your thoughts there, Swebsy, but I think we have some interesting names on this list that we can get into to maybe provide, you know, not as deep of names that you guys get into on In the Deep, but some guys that should be out there in most leagues. I use Yahoo as a roster ship barometer, but some guys that I think could be interesting and sort of a Justin Steele type. Hey, this guy probably should be rostered. This might be a little bit more than the streamer.
Yeah, sometimes fantasy baseball is easy. Sometimes there's a guy like Vinny Pasquantino out there in 85% of leagues, and we can look at his Statcast page and go, yeah, he's going to go off. And then, you know, we tell you to add him, and hopefully you add him, and then it happens. Mm-hmm. But it is rarely that easy with pitchers. Just as an example, in my NL only league, like so in the deep, the podcast that I do with Jordan White, my co-host, we look at 20% and under rostered. And so that's my domain usually. And in my NL only league, there are currently 6 quality starts on the waiver wire over the past like 30 days.
That's amazing.
There is so little quality pitching out there in deeper leagues. Pitching is tough. It as soon as someone shows a pulse, they tend to get added. Sometimes you get a guy like Justin Steele who sits out there for mm-hmm. too long because there's a lot of like, oh, it's Justin Steele. It's not going to last. But some of that is just lack of name recognition, and it takes a little while for the names to catch on. But yeah, that's what we're going to do here today. We're going to try to dig past the names, dig into the numbers a little bit, and try to pick out the guys that will be quality pitchers over the next 6 weeks and hopefully win you guys some championships.
I don't play in a league that deep. I'm just curious, like for hitters, right? Like what I would sort of default would be to sort of just sort by at bats, right? Like if I needed to find a spot, like I would sort over the last 14 days, I wouldn't even look at how they're performing. I would just see, okay, who's getting the most at bats. Like you know, that's a good point with pitchers. Like you probably can't even do that because not only they're not quality starts, they're probably not even many innings. Right for starters on the wire, right?
Unless you like Colorado Rockies,
yeah, Colorado Rockies starters at home. That's a great way to win your fantasy league. Yeah, no, that is tongue in cheek. Do not do that. All right, before we get in, I know Schwebzy, you're a big Mets fan. We haven't talked much real baseball on this podcast. I'm semi a Mets fan. I jumped on the bandwagon with my friends. I was a diehard Yankee fan growing up. Then I became addicted to fantasy baseball, just like everyone else listening to this, and I've lost all fanhood. But, you know, I still follow the Mets closely, living here in the tri-state area. I have a bunch of diehard Mets fan friends. I know they're coming off the sweep, if you can call it that. It was a 2-game series loss to the Yankees, but what are your overall feelings? I don't know. I haven't talked to you about this like in the Discord or anywhere like that. Like, how confident are you in the Mets' ability to, you know, reverse the LOL Mets sort of thing this year? Or are you still kind of just, you know, cautiously optimistic? Maybe that's a good way to put it.
There is the Mets could be 15 games ahead right now, and I would have zero confidence. We are in Queens. The fans are just built different. We do not do confidence. I have been waiting for the other shoe to drop over and over again. It's been a hard like 5 months. You would think being in first place from beginning to now that I'd be like feeling good. I feel terrible. I feel awful. I have a constant upset stomach because of this team. It's really not good.
Oh my god.
Actually, I don't know if we ever talked about this. I was a Yankee fan too up until the year 2000.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah, it was inherited, and then in the Subway Series I had a moment where I was like, screw you, Dad, and I became a Mets fan.
How old were you in the Subway Series?
I was 12.
Okay. So
I was
10, so you're a little bit older than me, but that's like still borderline the age that I'm saying it's okay to switch at that point. I mean, it's close, but
student loans are a hot topic right now. People take them out when they're 18 and it ruins their lives because they don't know what they're doing. That was me at 12 going from the Yankees to the Mets.
Yeah,
I didn't know what I was doing.
You were sticking it to your dad.
Why did someone let me make that decision? I was a child.
He should have warned you. Like, you know,
he probably did.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough call to let you go from the Yankees, coming off of their third World Series win in 4 years.
Coming off of the 90s Yankees.
Yeah. You probably don't want to do that unless you want to sign up for you know, 2 decades of suffering. You know, I'm maybe that's because I'm not this diehard Mets fan. I look at my friends, I'm like, come on, like, things are great. Like, you know, this is different. Those teams have nothing to do with these teams. Like, you know, it's different now. You got Steve Cohen. Like,
no, I have ulcers just developed this year.
Well, all right. I mean, at least, you know, there shouldn't be a 2006 or 2007 September or anything like that. You know, you probably are cringing with me saying that just on air, but.
I'm also friends with a lot of Braves fans, and they have been so confident all year long. And it's just, it eats at you. It's like, what do they know that I don't know? It's actually, I know exactly what they know. It's that the Mets are probably going to collapse.
Yeah. And they're kind of on an anti-Mets run from what, when they were like a game below 500 in the beginning of August last year. Was it even that late? Right. It was pretty crazy.
They never lose.
Yeah. And they don't lose. Incredible. It's only two games now, but I think it'll be a fun, you know, a fun September and a good time to be a Mets fan. So take that what you will. My two cents, it means nothing. I'm sure you're not feeling much more confident with my little bit of knowledge and, you know, half-hearted optimism, but go Mets.
I'm actually, you know? The last game, the last series of the season is between the Braves and the Mets. And I will be going to Atlanta to visit my Braves fan friends to go to those games together. And I just know that the Mets are going to stay in first the entire season until that day.
Well,
and that's when they'll give it up.
At least you'll be in first until the last of the season. That means they made the playoffs too, right? So
until September 29th.
That'll be, if they blow a lead like that, even for them that late, I don't know. I just don't see it. That would be
I'm not really
hard for me to believe that that would happen. All right, let's get into it. I guess we could start talking about Justin Steele, right? Like the model for this, you know, the guy that sort of is broken out. He's still just rostered in 36% of Yahoo leagues. I know that's not the best barometer, but, you know, for 12-team standard leagues, I think that's sort of the place to go. So I personally think Justin Steele should be rostered in anything 12 team or deeper. So for that, just to be in basically a third of that, I think there's a decent opportunity. You know, on the year, the numbers look good. It's a 325 ERA. It's backed up by a 343 xERA, a 24.5K percentage. The walk rate's a little high, but nothing too bad, at 9.4%. So he's not giving up like too many barrels or any hard hit, and it's backed up by a 50.9% ground ball rate. So, you know, there's probably been a good amount of double plays, not too many home runs. So that's not truly killing him. And, you know, a 3.4% barrel percentage allowed. I know, and, you know, another thing that's not great for pitchers to look at, but it's a good barometer that he's not giving up too much hard contact. So what do you see with Justin Steele there, Schwebzy? Like, you know, is this a good model for us to follow? Like, who could be underutilized starting pitchers down the stretch? You know, just your thoughts in general, and are you in on Justin Steele for the rest of the year and possibly beyond for 2023?
Well, the whole overarching theme here, the spreadsheet you put together with, I like it because I like the categories that you chose, because it's kind of like, it's like the classic good pitcher, right? It's lots of strikeouts, not a lot of walks, get some ground balls, and you're off to a great start. And Steele has been doing that, which is awesome. I'm a little bit worried for a couple of reasons. So figure over his last seven starts, and that's a very arbitrary time frame that I've chosen, he's only given up six earned runs. He's also given up 12 total runs. So, you know, is he pitching worse than his numbers show? Is his defense just being particularly bad lately? I mean, his indicators are still good. He's still got like a 2.2 FIP, a 2.86 xFIP. So his expected numbers are still a quality pitcher. But on top of allowing more runs than it shows on the surface lately, he's also had a pretty cushy schedule lately. He's gotten to face Milwaukee in Chicago, which is a better run environment than Milwaukee for pitchers. He's gotten to face Washington twice and Miami once. So while I do like the overall model that we're using here to pick out pitchers, I don't necessarily love Steele. You know, if you've rostered him up to this point, great, and you enjoy the ride. But this is very much what Nick Pollock of Pitcherlist calls a Vargas rule. I would not bet on this lasting for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and the next two starts are at Milwaukee and at Toronto. A lot of those unearned runs came in a 3 2/3 outing at San Francisco, where he gave up 4 runs, but none of them were earned. He did have 6 strikeouts and 1 walk. And what I would sort of push back on in that recent run, you know, it's been a lot of high strikeouts, low walk performances. Like, you know, sure, they've been both versus those teams that are bad and strike out a lot. 10 Ks versus the Marlins, that was only in 4 2/3 innings. 9 Ks just recently versus Milwaukee this Sunday. That was so. You know, the Ks are there, and they sort of have been all year. But in that NL Central, right? Like, there are going to be a lot of bad matchups that cover it up. Like, there's Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. You know, even at Milwaukee, I know it's a tough park to pitch in, but their offense sort of has been lacking all year, other than like the random few homers from like Tellez or whoever else, Adames. But they're not like an offense that I'm scared of and wouldn't necessarily avoid a stream against them. So I get that, but I think it's more of a jumping point to talk about. Sort of what I did for that leaderboard was just run it from 7-1 to 8-23 when I put this together yesterday, as we're recording this on Wednesday night, and just filtered for, you know, things that we like: a K percentage greater than 25%, a swing strike rate greater than 9%, CSW greater than 25%, a walk rate less than 9%, and a ground ball rate greater than 40%. So, yeah, the stuff that we like to do, Steele's been doing it. Maybe tread carefully with those matchups, like you said, just because there could be some cherry bomb opportunities, if you will, to quote another Nick Pollock term. All right, but the next guy I want to talk about is a guy that I think maybe we are a little bit more confident in. This might not be like an actionable grab a move unless it's a shallower league. That's George Kirby. He actually today set the record for most consecutive strikes to start a game, with 24 straight strikes to start a game, which is just crazy and speaks to how insane Kirby's command is. There's also the question that, hey, are there too many strikes? Is he catching the plate a little bit too much? But it's been working. He had another great outing today. Since July 1st, he's thrown 37.2 innings, so a little bit light on the innings because they did that thing around the All-Star break where they sent him down and then came back and was only going 2 or 3 innings at a time. But he's built up, and he's kind of a guy that it doesn't really matter how many that he's on an innings limit, because like, he only needs 90 pitches to get through 7 most days anyway, which is insane just because he walks so few guys and finds the zone so much. So what are your thoughts on Kirby? I've rostered him for most of the year, so I'm a little biased. I like him a lot. But what are your thoughts there on Kirby? I know we had a nice discussion with him on the Discord today. So what are you seeing there? Is he able to take the next step? And what does he need sort of to take that next step if he's going to be what we hope he is?
In a vacuum, he's by far like my favorite pitcher that we're going to talk about today. But, you know, we don't exist in a vacuum, unfortunately. You mentioned the biggest concern, and that is the workload. Last year, I think he threw like 67 pitches, 67 innings. Mm-hmm. Not pitches, that would be bad. And this year, he's already passed 90 between the majors and the minors. He's already been sent down to the minors once in order to kind of keep his innings under control. I don't know if that stint in the minors means he's, you know, full steam ahead for the rest of the year. I don't know if they're going to want to conserve him for the playoffs. I mean, just getting good playoff position means they kind of need all hands on deck. So it remains to be seen what they're going to do with Kirby for the rest of the year. But we don't have a concrete answer on that right now. So all we can really do is talk about how awesome he is. And he is awesome. The reason that he threw the major league record for number of strikes in a row to start a game is because he just absolutely fills up the strike zone. He's got an elite fastball, and he complements it with a bunch of other okay, well-located stuff. And that's a good place to start. That's a really good base with ace potential, because the really good fastball, like having a good fastball, is maybe a better base than any other elite pitch to start from.
How many guys do we talk about that's like, all right, the fastball stinks, but there's a great slider, there's a great this, there's a great that. It's so true.
Yeah. So, and he locates it well. He locates everything well. So it all, like, to be good, he doesn't need to do anything else. To be great, one of his secondaries needs to come along. May happen this year, may happen next year, but it doesn't really matter because he's fine as is. I don't think he's gotten lucky or unlucky this year. I think he just kind of is what he is at this point, with the potential for more. Now, if he starts throwing his fastball down the middle constantly and stops locating well, he will, you know, he'll be bad. But I really like the package right now. It's a really great starting point for a 24-year-old in his first major league experience. If for some reason he is out there, you know, grab him. He should be rostered universally.
I know we talked about this on a Discord. I don't know you specifically, but Kirby or his teammate, why am I blanking on the name right now?
Logan Gilbert.
This year and long term.
The command is the differentiator, because if it weren't for the command, I think they would be the same pitcher.
I agree. They have the same sort of issues. Nick talks about it all the time. But what's interesting with Kirby, the last few starts, he started throwing a two seamer, that just watching his starts, like, it moves great. He locates it well. It works great for called strikes. Like, it comes back and catches the inside corner, to lefties, which is, you know, a nice weapon to have. So that's been really impressive. The curveball usage has started to tick up, which I think is important, because I think he probably leaned on that slider a lot in the beginning, and it wasn't great. Although he threw a few nice ones today, but yeah, what do I know? Just watching the game. Wait till we have a larger sample and can see a whiff rate. But the curveball has been good, and I think he's close to unlocking that mix where it's like, all right, this guy's got a fastball that he could dot anywhere that's 97 and gets good ride and gets a lot of whiffs on its own. Like, look out when there's a slider that gets whiffs, a two seamer and a curve, right? Like, I am extremely excited to roster George Kirby next year. Glad I have a few shares of him this year too, because I think he'll be useful in the amount of innings that he'll be able to provide. So, like Kirby a lot, and agree. I think this will be our favorite name that we talk about. Not that there's other good pitchers, but, you know, probably some more warts as we go down the list. Warts, that's not a good transition, but I guess that's kind of what Alex Wood's surface numbers have figured to show this year. In 123 innings pitched, he's got a 4.54 ERA, 1.22 whip. You know, doesn't look that great on the surface, kind of the typical Alex Wood waiver wire fodder from year to year. But I don't know, under the hood, Wood has probably had his most impressive year, like, that I can remember. Like, I know a lot of people were in on him last year, and even still this year, there's probably been a few blowups there. I if I remember correctly, I think Wood has had like a 10 run outing, you know, this year that is buoying up that ERA. But it looks pretty good, like a 24% strikeout rate, just a 5.6% walk rate. It's backed up by 11% swing strike rate. A 28.9 CSW, so really good. And then on top of that, it's the typical Alex Wood, ton of ground balls, 49% ground ball percentage. Like, I don't know how Alex Wood isn't better. Maybe this is just who he is, kind of the guy that always underperforms according to his peripherals. But talk to me about Alex Wood, Schwebzy. What do you see there? Another guy that's rostered in a good amount of leagues, like Kirby, but you know, he's a frustrating player to roster, so maybe there are some leagues where you can go out and grab him. But he does meet that criteria. Showed up on the Justin Steele list. I'll have to think of a better name for that. But what are your thoughts there?
I was really hoping that I would look at Alex Wood's game log and see like a blow up against. So he did have that blow up against Atlanta,
right? And that was early. That was earlier in the year, though, right? That was like
one inning, six runs, real gross. I was hoping that this would be a 2021 Anthony DeSclafani situation where like he only got lit up by the Dodgers and everyone else he was an ace against. It's not that. Like, so if you take all of the starts where Alex Wood had less than six innings and at least three earned runs, Cincinnati, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Washington, Colorado twice, it's not great.
Yeah, you're starting him in every single one of those games.
Yeah, of course he did, because why wouldn't you? Yeah. And so a couple of these starts are at Colorado. He gave up, you know, and some of this is a function of being in the NL West. It's a brutal place to be. You have to pitch at Colorado regularly. You have to pitch against the Dodgers regularly. You have to pitch against San Diego, who are, in theory, a good offense.
Yeah,
I like Wood. I came into this year like really liking Alex Wood. And between him and Alex Cobb, I don't even know, like, I'm doubting my own analysis now because they've both been so inconsistent.
You know what? I think I know what it is now that you brought up Cobb. Like, this is the Giants paying for the run of overachieving last year and just everything going right and all these aging veterans mashing the ball and, you know, everyone having this comeback year and then just defying all odds. This is the penance that they have to pay, right? Like these
this
two
is,
pitchers.
This is what you get
with amazing underlying
numbers.
You want Austin
numbers. Slater? You want Austin Slater to be good? Fine. Alex Wood stinks now.
That is it. I think we nailed it. That is 100% it.
You,
like everything
you want
this
Luis
pitcher
Gonzalez?
Can do. Wilmer Flores. You want him to be a 20 home run hitter? You know.
Sorry, Alex Cobb. Done.
Yep. Yep. These guys that do everything right, but they're just going to have to give up runs. It's just a tax that they have to pay. And you know what? Honestly, as someone that sold the Giants until, like, you know, they made the playoffs and gave the Dodgers a run for their money in the division series, you know, I'm fine by it. I'm fine by it just because, you know, that's what it is. Baseball has to be cruel. It can't always work your way. But still, that being said, I still like Wood. I think that he should pitch closer to his indicators, which are all like mid three ERAs the rest of the way. He's doing all the things that we want to see. Yeah, of course.
I'm being flippant. I'm absolutely, you know, I'm exaggerating the extent of my Alex Wood betrayal. But yeah, his next couple of starts are at Minnesota, which is fine. And then home against San Diego, which, you know, also not great, but fine. I wouldn't be surprised if he, honestly, like, Wood is at the point where nothing he could do would surprise me if he got either blown up or pitched a great start. So I think whether you want to run him out there or not just depends on your confidence in your own team or your own team needs. You know, so his Minnesota start is on a Friday. So if it's Friday, if your pitching staff is looking good, maybe bench him. If you, you know, if you need a home run play, he's a real good chance to, you know, have a home run start.
Yep. That's a great call. And head to head too. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, but his best walk rate of his career, the slider usage is up. Like, this should be better, but yeah, the Giants used all their Cardinal devil magic, last year. So they have to wait a year. Maybe, it's a sign to be in on Wood, and Cobb. Next year is Cobb a free agent? I think they signed him to a longer deal.
But I think it was 2 years.
Yeah, you're right. All right, we're gonna take a real quick ad break, and then we're gonna come back and talk about some more interesting pitchers for the stretch run.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, Schwabzy, the next guy I want to talk about is someone that, you know, I feel that there's pitchers that you always find on your team, whether they stream or whether you draft them late or one way or the other, they're just always on your squad. But Ross Stripling has been, even when he wasn't a starter and was like a bulk guy in for the Dodgers, I always had a few shares of Ross Stripling. And it's been pretty good to have a few shares of Ross Stripling. He has, since July 1st, a 2.41 ERA, a 0.99 WHIP. That's across 37 innings. There was an IL stint where he missed only a turn or two, I think, there in the middle of early August. But came back. He pitched great last night. I know it was the Red Sox, and they're reeling. But I think it was six innings of one-run ball. But things are going good. It's the best walk rate of his career. That's something that troubled him at times. Especially when he went over to the Blue Jays, his fly ball percentage is way down. So, you know, those homer issues that plagued him at times, isn't as bad. And, you know, he's traded, he started throwing his slider more and his changeup more, which have been really, really good pitches, specifically the changeup for whips. It's got a 32% whiff percentage, which is really good for a changeup. I'm liking what I'm seeing for Ross Stripling. I think it could be sort of a thing that it's another one. The AL East kind of stinks for pitching, but you know, that's kind of why Stripling is available. You know, maybe, you know, after this Red Sox start, if you see like a Yankee start coming up, someone might drop him. But I think it might be worth scooping up just with the kind of run that he's on. And Stripling showed us flashes of this before. And I know, we were hoping the Blue Jays sort of could kind of fix him with their pro pitching development. Besides Yusei Kikuchi, ignore that result. But I like Stripling a lot. Again, maybe I'm biased, so talk me into it or out of it.
So the good news first. The good news is that his next two starts are against home against the Angels and then on the road against Pittsburgh, and that's great because the Angels are reeling, although they do have a healthy Trout and Otani right now, and Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh, so that's good. Also, what version of Stripling are we on right now? Because I feel like he's gone through so many like career rejuvenations and iterations. Like, remember when he was like the best starter in the NL for 3 months and he was an all-star in 2018? Mm-hmm. Then there was the free Ross Stripling version when he was relieving when we all wanted him to start, but I digress. This is one of those like duh sorts of analysis, but simply not walking anybody raises the floor of a pitcher by a ton. This kind of applies to Kirby from before. Also, he's like 99th percentile in walk rate, which, you know, gives him a much higher floor because much fewer base runners. And Stripling has done that pretty regularly in his career. This would be the third separate year of his career where he walked fewer than 2 per 9. But I worry a little bit here because at PitcherList we have a term we use, the hotel, the holy trinity of stats equating luck. And two of his three hotel stats, his BABIP and his home run per fly ball rate, are like super low. Mm-hmm. And that makes me nervous, especially pitching in Toronto. Toronto is a notable home run haven, even though it suppresses offense overall, but it's good for home run hitters. So it's weird to me that he's having his career best year in suppressing home runs. Yeah, I like him. There is a lot to like here. But I would be careful about who you start him against when he's at home. That's my one thing.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I lean to the picks mix change. I don't know if you read it or listened to it, but you know, mm-hmm. Sarah's talked about on Rates and Barrels and wrote an article about changers and stuff plus, and the biggest way to change your stuff plus isn't by gaining velocity or anything like that, or changing your pick shape. It's by changing your pitch mix. And that's what he's done. His fastball, which is garbage, his percentage for his fastball is way down, and he's now throwing that changeup and slider a lot more, which paired with that microscopic walk rate, like that's a recipe for success. So I know that those indicators and those luck stats are down. He does allow, you know, an 8.2% power rate, which, you know, probably should be a little bit higher on the 6% homer to fly ball, right? But I'd lean a little bit more to that pitch mix change and the fact that that changeup is really good and he's throwing it a lot more. It excites me, and, you know, I'd hold through those good starts. Like, you know, if he's still somehow out there after that last start versus the Red Sox and has those juicy matchups up, like this would be a guy that I would look to add, like, you know, first thing, like, right. Like those two matchups are just, you know, I'd be confident streaming you in a 2-start week, versus the Angels and the Pirates there. It's just, you can't get any better than that. You know, maybe Alex Cobb would find a way to mess that up, but
yeah, I buy that he's made a change and that he's better. But just for reference, last year he threw 522 four seamers and gave up 18 home runs on them. This year he's thrown 259, about half, and he's given up 2 home runs on the four seamer.
Yeah, just don't throw the four seam. Just don't throw the, you know, that's what he said. Just don't throw the four seam. You can't give up home runs if you don't throw it.
Maybe if he completely cuts out the four seamer, I will buy a 6% home run to fly ball.
That's fair. Yeah, there's probably going to be a few more home runs coming. But maybe there'll be solo jobs just because the walk rate's down and the other pitchers are good. But
yeah, this isn't to say don't add Ross Stripling. This is just to say, you know,
don't expect an SP1 or anything like that.
Right.
Expect like a back end 3-4, which, you know, I make my money off those kind of starters. I love those starters. I don't draft the pitchers early. I make my pitching staffs with Ross Striplings and a guy that we'll talk about next, Aaron Savales, things like that. So this is where I live. This is my wheelhouse for pitching. Speaking of Savale, another guy that does not look good on the whole for the year. He's got a 5.37 ERA, 1.34 WHIP, 70 innings pitched. He's been hurt with like a wrist injury, right? I think he missed like close to 2 months with that. But since he's come back in mid-July, he's gone 28 innings pitched. He's got a 27.7% strikeout rate, just a 4.5% walk rate. And that's good for a 2.83 ERA and a 0.9 WHIP. So he's been good. I know he was just okay, versus the, Padres yesterday, which you would hope would go better for the run that he's on, but the curveball looks really good. It wasn't as sharp yesterday, but that curveball has a 43.8% whiff percentage. That is absolutely ridiculous. And a 24.7% put away percentage. That usage is up. The fastball percentage is way down. I think he's kind of basically chucked it this year, which is good because that's another garbage fastball. And the cutter usage is up. It's not the pitch it was last year where it was a negative 13 run value. That's how good his cutter was last year. But, you know, you like to see that change for the fastball, which is garbage. So I know Savale is a guy that throws a bunch of different pitches. I think there's like 6 pitches on his Savant mix. But a few of those, you know, he barely throws. But still, it's nice to have that many weapons to go to. The curveball has been looking great. I know he's been on Pitching Ninja his last few starts. It's just been, you know, those pretty rainbow curveballs that he's been getting a bunch of strikeouts on. Another guy that it's been a few cushy starts. I think it was twice versus the Tigers since he came back. So, you know, it might be a little bit of the schedule being fortunate for him since he's come back from injury. But I still like some things under the hood. You know, who are you more confident in, Schwebs, Savale or Stripling? I'll let you do a little deep dive on Savale before we have to answer that, though.
So, all right, yeah. So first, Savale. Something I really like about him is his willingness to tinker. Like, this year, if you just look at his month-over-month pitch mix, like, he's basically ditched his splitter, ditched his slider, ditched his four-seamer, which is good because the four-seamer got hit for a 364 average, the slider 462, and the splitter got hit for a literal 500 batting average. And it's good that he ditched them because yikes. But, and this is another one of those duh bits of baseball analysis, throwing your worst pitches less is often one of the best changes a pitcher can make. That goes back to what Steve was saying about Eno Saris and the stuff plus ticking up when the pitch mix changes. Mid-year repertoire changes are one of the biggest areas of opportunity for finding sleepers if you're paying attention. Year after year on the waiver wire, pitchers do it, and they're better in the second half than they were in the first half. And, you know, picking those guys out and taking advantage is one of the best things you can do to increase your championship hopes. As for who I would pick between Savale and Stripling, that's a good question. I would probably go with Savale because of the environment. You mentioned that he's faced Detroit twice in his last few starts, and that's the benefit of pitching in the AL Central. There are no world-beating offenses in the AL Central. There are several good pitchers' parks, whereas Stripling, his home ballpark is a home run launching pad, which hasn't hurt him yet, but like I said before, that could change. And he's got to deal with, in theory, a good Boston offense. He's got the Rays, who always scrape together runs, and he's got the Yankees to deal with and the resurgent Orioles. There's no easy matchup there in his division games. So yeah, for the rest of the year, I would go Savale over Stripling.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Savale's next two starts at Seattle and then home versus Seattle. And those honestly might be two of the harder starts the rest of the way, just because, like you said, pitching in the NL Central, AL Central is a place where you want to pitch. And I don't know. I think they still do it, at least this year with the schedule. Like, they tend to load up division games towards the end of the year, right? Because they want to have games that in theory would impact the race. So if that is the case, there's going to be some good matchups there for Savale. If not, I'm an idiot and ignore me, but I haven't looked into the schedule that far. Just the next two starts. But anyway, moving on. Josiah Gray. Don't want to spend too much time on him. Kind of a guy that's been talked about a bunch, you know, typical good stuff, young pitcher, maybe a year away. He's being skipped for his next start. So his next start isn't going to come till, you know, early September as we talk here on August 24th. But still doing a lot of things right. Maybe the walk rate is a bit high. But for 2023, I'm liking Josiah Gray. He seems like a typical guy that could take a next step. I don't know if you have too much to add there, Schwebsy, but, seems like a high stuff guy that, I tend to love if they go a little bit later in drafts. Like, right, if he's already got 123 innings this year, innings shouldn't be a concern next year, but you never know. So what are your thoughts there on Josiah Gray in Washington?
In the notes that you sent me, it said that I assume because I didn't look at the numbers that this is a typo, but it said he's got a 99% walk rate, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right for Josiah Gray.
I think it's 9.9. Yeah, I missed the decimal there. Yeah.
You had it at the beginning there, I think, or I agree with what you said in that he is a next year kind of guy, a guy that can take a step forward next year, but I'm pretty out on him for this year The only reason I would start him this year is if he's got a cushy matchup and I needed strikeouts specifically, because he's got the good breakers. We talked before about a good fastball being a good base to work from, and how we always talk about these guys who have bad fastballs and good breakers, and if only they had a good fastball, and Josiah Gray is that guy. It's a shame because the breakers are fantastic. Mm-hmm. But between the walks and a much too hittable fastball, I'm out on this for this year.
Yeah, I agree. It shouldn't be that bad of a fastball, right? I think we had Alex Chamberlain on in the off season. We were talking about vertical attack angle or vertical approach angle, and Grace, I believe, popped in that. Maybe I'm misremembering. And he was not good and didn't like his fastball. The more I talk about it, I think that's the case. But you know, he throws hard. That's something that maybe, you know, you could fix in a pitching lab in the off season, sort of the shape there, and then improve the fastball. If you have the velocity, I think that's a big step, and he does have that. So I'm in on Gray for next year. For this year, you're right. Like, Gray is like a extreme blow up candidate in my mind, and like that's the last thing you need in like a playoff matchup or like where you're chasing an ERA category or something like that. But yeah, in for Gray next year, mostly out this year. Tend to agree. All right, now a guy that I'm really excited to talk about. This might not be the best pitcher on the list, but the guy that I'm most excited to talk about. We were talking about it in Discord today. Glad he was on the rundown before we got to it, and that's Matt Manning. He's been on a great run since he's come back from the IL. A few starts ago, he's got 27 strikeouts in his last 30 innings pitched. On the year, he's got a 2.81 ERA, a 1.16 WHIP. The overall strikeout numbers don't look that great, but you know there's some tweaks that are interesting, and I think that's the introduction and uptick of the slider that's been really good. Today he had 12 whiffs on 19 slider swings. I know it was the Giants and they've been pretty bad and it was on the road. But still, I'm liking what I'm seeing from Manning. That slider is impressive. What are you thinking there? What are your thoughts on Matt Manning?
So for this year, it's all about that slider. I think if it can keep continuing to be this effective, I think Manning will continue to be good. The fastball is performing much better than it did last year, but nothing has really changed with it. You know, it hasn't gained any velo. It's still got the exact same spin. I don't think it's a different arm angle. He's simply locating it better. He's throwing it to the top of the zone more. And as a result, he's getting like way more whiffs on it, like a 5% jump, which is huge. As far as like the future, I don't think he's going to succeed long term only being a two pitch guy. And I would love if any of his other pitches would come through. Like, his changeup is like legitimately bad. I'm not sure if the sinker and curveball between the two of them, which should be the focus of the development. But as for this year, you know, we mentioned the AL Central being a good place to pitch. That holds for Manning just like it does for Savali. And Manning has the benefit of pitching in Comerica, which is maybe the most cavernous ballpark in Major League Baseball. And in a good way, not in the way that Coors Field is cavernous. So I like Manning. I like Manning a lot this year. And, you know, of all the guys we're going to talk about today, outside of Kirby, I think Manning might be my favorite.
Like, yeah, long term? Yeah.
I know I said that like as a question, but no, yeah. I do think he's my favorite for the rest of the year.
And it's surprising too, because I think in just reading the scouting reports, he's got a 60 grade at Fangraphs on the fastball. And it just hasn't been a 60 grade pitch. I know he's battled injuries this year, last year, you know, had the shortened season before that. So who knows if there's like a full normal healthy off season and the fastball sort of goes back to what scouts thought it would be, and pair that with the slider, and then, you know, a few other show me pitches, that could be something that could lead to a breakout. Another guy that there's been, you know, the good results have been versus pretty bad teams. Did throw seven shutout innings at Tampa Bay, versus Tampa Bay. So, even though Tampa can scrape together some runs, that's not the greatest offense. He kind of got hit around a bit by the White Sox. And then the last two starts were versus the Angels at home and then the Giants at home. So some really good matchups there that have led to these results. But overall, I tend to agree. I'm another guy that I'm excited about, not only for next year, but, you know, he's got Seattle at home for his next two starts. I would definitely want to stream him there with the run that he's going on. Moving on to the next guy, a guy that you don't like, which is nice. Let's talk about a guy that you don't like, something that we can, you know, go back and forth on. That's JT Brubaker, Coffee Cakes, as our Lord and Fantasy Master Nick Pollock likes to call him. He's just 9% rostered in Yahoo League, so out there pretty much in all shallowish leagues. On the year, he's got a 4.39 ERA, a 1.43 WHIP. Nothing great. Under the hood, it's a 23% strikeout rate, 8.3% walk rate. But he does, and this is what always gets me with him, it's a 12.2% swing strike rate, a 29.8% CSW. Like, that should be good. Pair that with a 44% ground ball rate. Like, why isn't Brubaker good? Like, this is Alex Cobb, just maybe a little bit worse all around. Alex Cobb and Alex Wood. And on the Pirates, right? Like, get him out of Pittsburgh and he'll be a good pitcher. Maybe that's the answer. But why do you hate Coffee Cakes so much? Talk me out of him as to why I shouldn't be targeting him as a streamer down the stretch.
It's because the upside feels so low to me. I would say, like, I'm using a very, very loose definition of a great start here, but by my estimation, he's had two great starts this year. He had one against Miami, one against Boston. The Boston one was last week. I don't want to bet on a streamer, and that's all he is to me. He was on the, remember that league I mentioned earlier where there were only like six quality starts on the waiver wire? JT Brubaker was on the waiver wire. So that alone.
Wow, that tells you a lot. Yeah. He's been rostered basically all year in my 14 team mixed home league. So for him to be out there,
surprising to me.
That is something.
I would start him only if it was like the cushiest of streams. Like if it was Pittsburgh at home versus Cincinnati or like at home versus Colorado. Like he's had successful starts in that situation before. Mm-hmm. He's had successful starts when Boston was completely reeling, when at Miami, against Chicago. It needs to be a good matchup though. He's not the kind of pitcher where you can go, well, he was good against Miami, I'll throw him out there against Atlanta, see how it goes. That's not going to work. It's going to go poorly and you're going to regret it.
Yeah, that's fair. But also I think could be useful just because there's some strikeout upside.
Yes.
You know, it's been since July 1st, a 13.5% swinging strike rate with a 46.2% ground ball rate, 32% CSW. Like, you know, even though it was six runs, it was a little bit of a careful Icarus, as Nick likes to call it. I think he gave up six runs in the sixth inning versus Atlanta on Tuesday. He did have eight Ks and one strike, one walk. So, you know, I think underneath it all, I think there's a good pitcher with JT Brubaker. I know he's another guy that Eno Saris has loved for years. He pops on the stuff plus models, like, and I get it. Like, everybody has to be sick of Brubaker at this point, right? Like, you know, a guy that like you drop mid start when he gives up five runs in a cushy matchup, in the third inning. So I get it. But I still think there's an intriguing stuff underneath here. And maybe it comes when he does move away from Pittsburgh, just because it seems like they can't get the most out of their pitchers there. So,
somebody trade for
JT Brubaker and Mitch Keller in a package for like,
please. I was just going to bring up Mitch Keller. I went through all the stages of depression and grief with Mitch Keller this year. Free Mitch Keller and free coffee cakes.
All right. I like it. I like it. Maybe we could start that petition in the off season. If somebody doesn't do it, I'm sure there's some smart baseball executives that want to do that though. All right. A guy that I'm pretty excited to talk about. I've used him in a bunch of leagues recently to moderate success, but I think there might be something here, but maybe it's a similar situation where it's just such an awful organization that they can't get anything out of these guys. That's Jose Suarez of the Angels. This year in 14 starts, he's got a 4.19 ERA, a 1.34 whip. Nothing too great, seemingly, waiver wire material, streamer material. A 22.5 K rate, an 8.5% walk rate, but another guy that's sort of intriguing under the hood, a 12% swing strike rate, 26.5% CSW. I like it. He's been pretty good since July 1st, a 4 ERA, but that comes with just a 70% left on base and a 3.87 FIP, so maybe getting a little unlucky there. I like Jose Suarez. Maybe it's another guy that I'm sort of blinded by with a higher swing strike rate. I guess that's what I'm a sucker for. Who do you like better, Jose Suarez or JT Brubaker?
So that's tough for me because Jose Suarez is actually – so my process for doing In the Deep, every week I pull up the – I pull up a player rater for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whichever time frame the mood strikes that particular episode. And I'll check to see which players have been doing well just to give me like a starting point of, which barely rostered guys are doing well. And Jose Suarez is always like in a good spot on the list of pitchers. And every single time I completely ignore him, I don't know why. I just, for whatever reason, I have a mental barrier where I cannot acknowledge that Jose Suarez is pitching well. He's had a few really good appearances lately, but it was against Oakland twice and Kansas City. Like in his last five appearances, he's got three scoreless starts. And yeah, but it was against those teams. I think he is stretched as a starter. I think he is very good as a long man. I think he'd be a fantastic pitcher in that role. But I think as soon as they start trying to throw him out there every 5 days, the cracks are going to start showing. That doesn't mean he doesn't have his uses. He is not someone that I would pick up with the intention of keeping him for the next 6 weeks. He's someone that I would pick up with the intention of, throwing him out there against an Oakland or a Kansas City and taking advantage of those weak matchups.
Yeah, it's not someone that you want to stream right now because his next two starts are projected to be versus the Yankees and versus Houston. So, even as a Jose Suarez stan, I am not interested in that. Despite the last few starts looking sort of meh, they've both similar lines, 5.1 innings pitched, 3 earned runs. He did, I think, have like a perfect game going through the fifth versus Seattle. Has had 5 strikeouts to no walks in both of those games. So, there's some things there that could be interesting. And, he's just 24 years old, has a good slider. I think there might be some back end of the rotation long-term, back end of the fantasy rotation long-term excitement here, which is not much to get excited about, but hey, in deep leagues, it could be as a useful streamer. Just don't stream now with those matchups.
This episode is kind of exposing both of our viewpoints on things, because when you get to like sub 20% pitcher land, it's very, very easy to poke holes in any player. And I being a natural pessimist, I find those holes and you're like, yeah, but the swinging strike rate's good.
Yeah. I look at the glass half full with that. I like it. Like 12% swing strike, sign me up. I don't care if he's giving up, 3 runs the last 5 starts, that's all right. He strikes some guys out.
Your way is the better way and the more difficult way, because like I said, it's easy to poke holes in these guys.
Yeah. There's always a reason not to roster somebody. I'm also the guy that I barely ever start a guy. Like, you know, even if like Alex Cobb is in Coors, like I'm like, oh, but he's got a good ground ball rate. Like you could start ground ball pitchers in Coors. Like I'm always doing that. I rarely sit guys. Maybe that's just my mentality overall with these pitchers, but it does lead to some, you know, I remember a few years ago, I started Pablo Lopez versus the Mets when he was like just coming up and he gave up 10 earned runs on a Friday night, like and ruined my weekend before it even started because of a fantasy matchup. But whatever, I digress. I like the Stark guys. All right, someone that I think you can get excited about, a name that you added to the rundown, which very appreciative that you did, Austin Voth. He's been really, really good recently. I'm glad you put him on. It's a thing that, you know, a change organization. Washington has been probably one of the worst, if not the worst, with starting pitchers and developing them and using them. I know they like had a Strasburg guy, but that was basically a plug it in, forget it, and didn't really have to do much.
Finished product coming into college.
Yeah, they didn't really have to do much there. But this also brings up an interesting thing because you talk about pitch mix change. Cespedes Family Barbecue put out some interesting pitchers that were traded at the deadline, and they just showed their month over month pitch mix from Savant. And you just saw, you know, a few guys like Luis Castillo, Frankie Montes, guys that got traded. You saw how their pitch mix changed, and you can basically see what the team said to the new pitchers or to their new pitchers when they got them. Stop throwing this pitch, throw this pitch more. It's just absolutely fascinating. That being said, I did not do that with Austin Voth, but it's just an interesting thought because he changed teams and basically almost immediately had success with the Orioles. So it's been a good run here. What are your thoughts? What do you see with Austin Voth? Why are you so intrigued by him? I know you talked about him on this week's In the Deep. If you haven't listened to that, go back and do it. Schwabzy provides great analysis. Him and Jordan do every week. So another plug there. Not that we didn't do it already, but talk to me about Voth.
Yeah, the format of In the Deep is that we do deep dives on players before we do kind of a rundown of a variety of players. And last week, Austin Voth was the deep dive, so I spent a good, 8 or 10 minutes talking about him. And one of the things that the pitch mix was the big thing. You know, he's been a reliever in Washington for the last, like, season and a half. He had a good run as a starting pitcher for them in, I think it was 2019, and then he was bad as a starter for them in 2020. And they were like, that's it. You're done as a starter. You're a reliever from here on out. And I wish I knew what it was that Baltimore saw in him. But Washington DFA'd him. Baltimore acquired him. And the second Baltimore acquired him, they started stretching him out. There was no, like, wait time. They were immediately like, you're a starter now.
I wish, yeah, right. Wouldn't that be so interesting to know why, like, what was in that room? Like, you know,
right. The
money ball meme going around, you know, Billy, this is Austin Voth. You know, his only weakness is that he's on the Nationals, right? Like, something like that.
It's funny because I put in my notes and then forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about Josiah Gray, that one of the reasons I'm not confident in him is because he's a National, but I didn't want to pile on too much.
That's absolutely valid.
Because it feels like a change is needed, and I don't feel like they're the franchise that will coach him in that properly. But we're in the reverse situation here. Austin Voth has escaped the Nationals, and he's throwing his cutter more. And stop me if you've heard this one before, but he's throwing his bad four-seamer less, and he has basically ditched a pretty bad slider, kind of replaced the slider with a good cutter. And it's all in the numbers. He's been good ever since. And it's not like the kind of good where, like, I'm looking at it and I go, this is completely unsustainable. There's no one glaring number. Like, for example, Ross Stripling's home run per fly ball. There's no number like that where I'm like, oh man, he's been lucky. It looks mostly sustainable. I think he's been pitching roughly 3 ERA ball since the start of July, and I think he's probably like a high threes guy. So he's better than he will be, but I think he's a perfectly fine arm. High threes is probably not quite good enough to start every start in a standard league, but for any league deeper than standard, like, Voth is probably rosterable.
Yeah, and I mean, Baltimore is not as bad of a place to pitch with, you know, that wall there.
Oh, yeah. You know, it went from the worst home run park for pitchers to the best, insane, or like one of the worst to the actual insane. Best.
They definitely did not want it to be that drastic, right? It's like, we wanted less home runs, but maybe not that few home runs.
Oh, man, I wish I could remember. I saw a tweet the other day that was like the home run differential between Baltimore and its opponents went from like the worst. Like, it used to be their opponents out-homered them in Canton a ton. And now it's like not at all, just because the overall home run rate has been cut.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't think there's been an opposite field home run there all year. I could be wrong. That could have happened over the last few months since I've seen that tweet. But, you know, yeah, that, you know, that's another one. That's where I got my source. I saw a tweet about it, so it's got to be true. But there's been very few, if any, opposite field home runs there. It's just crazy. So no lefty has hit a home run to left field, right? That makes sense. Or
yeah, yeah. You'd have to hit, yeah, like, it would have to be a Stantonian shot to actually, yeah, hit one, yeah,
opposite, or like, field, somehow hug the opposite field foul pole to that like little short,
yeah, area. Yeah,
it's crazy what's been there. But hey, it's been good for the pitchers. It's good for Austin Voth. And yeah,
yeah, I've been talking up Boston starters as streamers at home all year long, largely because of that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's just a completely different park. You know, pair that with the new run environment, the fact that, you know, there aren't as many home runs. Like, I was looking at I was just watching MLB Network today and just the bottom line for like NL home run leaders, and they're like all in like the mid to low 30s, and like it was just so like that used to be like the last few years, like that could have been the home run leaders at the All-Star break. Like, there was a few guys that had 30 at that point, but I don't know. I'm another one. Like, give me back my old rabbit ball. I love home runs. Like, I don't care if there was a few more strikeouts. It didn't even cut strikeouts that much. Like, it didn't even help what they wanted to do. Now it's just the same amount of strikeouts with less home runs. Like, who wants that? But whatever.
Yeah, I miss when Jeff McNeil had like 20 home runs.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been nice. As you know, leading the NL in average and also popping 15 to 20 home runs. So that would be nice for sure. But regardless, Austin Voth, I love it. I think it's a good play. He does have the Astros next, but then after that, it's first Oakland. Yeah. So if you want to, you know, that can be like an add him, don't start him, hold him on for the next start. It's in Houston too, so that would take even I would second guess starting him there. Someone that starts
the polar opposite of left fields.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. Maybe put the Crawford boxers back in Camden. I don't like Baltimore. I miss the home runs there. I went to college in Baltimore, so went to a bunch of Orioles games when they were pretty bad. Like when they first got Adam Jones, that's when I was there. So. I love that stadium. It just doesn't look right too. It looks like a bad creative stadium. There's just like a big green wall out in left field that is preventing all my home runs. I miss the
it's
old
like
Camden
Yards. Someone created like 95% of a really good stadium and then just kind of lost the energy.
It's like that other meme, like the horse drawing where like the top, yeah, of the horse is beautiful and it's this great Camden Yard Park, and then, you know, just a scribble, let's draw a straight big line with this big wall to, you know, prevent home runs. And they lost seating too. I don't get it. But whatever, I digress. I don't know. We went a little long here, a little over an hour. One guy I did just want to bring up, I know he's currently hurt now, but been really, really interesting to me. That's Braxton Garrett. He's on the IL with an oblique strain. Obliques are tough, so I would not be surprised if we don't see him again this year, but name maybe to keep in mind for 2023. Since July 1st, he has 46 and a third innings pitched, a 26.5% strikeout rate, a 12.3% swing strike rate, just a 5.9% walk rate, and had a 2.91 ERA backed up by a 3.22 Sierra over that time. There was a bunch of starts where he struck out a bunch of guys. I know that it's another like bad fastball, low velocity guy, but has some interesting secondaries and had some really good results. Marlins are a sneaky good pitching organization, so I'm liking what I saw and am definitely in for 2023 for Braxton Garrett. What are your thoughts here quickly as we wrap up the show here, as I know we've gone a little long here?
Garrett's one of those fun, more modern day pitchers where he's 26% four seamer. Like he throws a slider a third of the time. And then he does throw 45% fastballs, but it's split between his four seamer and his sinker, giving you different looks because he throws them to opposite sides of the plate. So he actually gets he's 93rd chase rate percentile in the league, which I would never have guessed.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to like pick up on or something, right? Like that's just crazy how good that is.
Like looking at his locations, like he does not locate his changeup and curveball well. So that chase rate has to be all on the slider, which is impressive.
It looks like it's a perfect, you know, diagonal slice through the zone.
Right.
Like exactly what you want to see for those heat maps for sliders.
I missed on Braxton Garrett when he was still in my sub 20% domain. So I haven't looked into him too much before today, but I'm more impressed than I thought I would be.
Yeah, I love
it's so infrequent when I look into a player and I'm like more impressed than I thought I'd be, because like I said, I'm a pessimist. I find the bad things, but this is better. This is good.
The Mets are going to lose. No pitcher's good. Like why would this go right?
I think it was Nick Neidert that scarred me. I just when a no name pitcher comes up in Miami, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Oh God, Nick Neidert. Yeah, I probably have streamed him a few times to no avail. So, hey, despite that, I'm still a bit of an optimist. So, hey, there's hope for you. There's hope for the Mets. There's hope for Braxton Garrett, a name to keep in mind. All right, Schwebzy, I kept you for long enough. I know we chatted a bunch before we started recording here. I cannot thank you enough for doing this, that I didn't have to solo. Props to you for doing those. I know you've done those the last few weeks. I would not be able to talk to myself. I just can't. I can't hear myself talk. But you've been doing a great job on In the Deep. Why don't you plug that? Plug your Twitter handle, whatever else you want to plug. Use our pitcher list platform to promote yourself on another podcast. Because despite being a pessimist, you deserve promotion. I will back that up no matter what you say. So don't be too hard on yourself despite me giving you the floor here.
Well, yeah, I mean, being a Pitcherless Podcast Network rival, I hope I did a terrible job and tanked your ratings here. you can find me at Schwebzy, Schwebsi, on Twitter, or you can find my co-host, who is smarter, more handsome, and funnier than I am, at Bunt Singles. And we're actually getting close to the end of the year for In the Deep, because I'm about to go on my honeymoon, so I'm gonna probably miss a September episode or two, but we'll be back going strong, hopefully sometime during the off season.
Awesome, cannot wait to listen to that. They are great episodes, deep dives, and you know, I like I said, I don't play in that many deep leagues. The deepest league I play in is like a mixed 15-teamer NFBC style stuff. But there's useful information on any league for that. It's a must listen for me, not just because it's part of the same podcast network I'm on. You and Jordan do great jobs, and I truly mean that. It takes a lot to go into someone that deep. That's, you know, not on a radar for everybody, or someone that's writing articles on daily to, you know, spark some ideas. So it's great stuff that you guys do there, and could not appreciate it more and talk about how good a good job you guys do, you and Jordan there. So thanks again for coming on. Thanks for filling in for the traveling van. That could be a bad pun name too there for my co-host. Hope he doesn't get too mad at me for that one. But thanks, Schwebzy. It was a blast. I will be talking to you in the Discord, and it was great talking baseball with you. Appreciate it.
You too.
All right. Later, guys.